Chapter 9. For the next 3 nights, she dreams with Gendry. Dreams them into their field and pitches with a fury unlike anything.
Anything on your mind?
Gendry teases as she strikes him out again. Nope, she calls back. Not letting it. Only softball. She refuses to let the diamond turn into quantometrical plots again. And she refuses to wrap her head in circles, thinking about the lie. Not now. Not until after she's finished finals.
That's good, he replies.
Have you heard back from the scouts yet? She asks, and he shakes his head.
I'll probably hear back on Wednesday. I imagine while you're in one of your finals, actually.
Looks like we both have something to look forward to that day, she says dryly, and sends the ball spinning past him again.
Arya?
His voice sounds strangled, almost upset. Yeah?
Never mind, he says quickly.
Nope, I won't. What's up?
He doesn't speak for a moment, and she can tell he's warring with himself, trying to determine if it's worth saying. She knows it too well. Is it a big deal? Does it go without saying? Should it be said on principle?
She waits calmly, watching him closely, and finally he speaks.
What if I don't get selected? What if I don't make the big leagues, and I'm stuck doing nothing?
Arya cocks her head at him. You were the best hitter on the team, and you helped bring your team to semifinals for the first time in years.
Yeah, but
if you don't get selected, it's because they're stupid, not because you're bad. Anyone look at you can tell you should be playing in the majors.
He looks down at the plate, and Arya crosses the stretch of grass between them and wraps her arms around his waist, standing on her tiptoes so she can rest her chin easily on his shoulders. She breathes him in, feeling his heart pounding against her ribcage as he stands there, almost trembling.
Econ is a nightmare, but one that she comes out of feeling like she might have vanquished a mortal enemy. Advanced quantometrics, she's pretty sure, chewed her up and spat her back out. But looking around the exam room after they take her blue book away from her, she's pretty sure that everyone feels the same. So she might have scraped a good grade, depending on how they curve the class. She sits numbly by herself during dinner, scrolling through messages on her phone.
Jon Snow. You are going to kick ass tonight. I'm so excited for you.
Bran Stark. Remember how we didn't know how I would use my god powers to help you? Well, I'm using them tonight to make sure you win. So when you win, it's really because of me, all right?
Sansa Stark. I'm so excited. I don't think I've seen you play before.
Dad. Good luck. We're all cheering for you. I've even got Mom watching.
Mom. Ignore your father. He's stirring up trouble. I would be watching anyway.
Mom, we're so proud of you, and I can't wait.
Rickon Stark. If the other team wins, I will beat them up.
Robb Stark. John says you're pitching tonight. You're gonna do great. Breathe deep and relax. You can do it.
She hardly has a moment to process the outpouring of love from her family before her phone rings in her hand and it's Gendry.
Hey, she says, smiling exhaustedly into the phone.
Two down, one to go.
He sounds like he's grinning. How do you feel?
A bit numb, and like my mind can't really function anymore.
Function? Is that a math joke?
No, stop, I hate you.
He snorts. That's good enough. It means you can't overthink the game. Let your body take over. It knows what to do.
She nods, then remembers he can't see her, and says,
I don't think I'll have any trouble with that.
He laughs. I should go. I just wanted to wish you luck.
You'll be there, right? She asks.
Obviously.
Good. She smiles. Gendry?
Yeah?
The scouts. Did you?
River Run and Old Town both made offers.
Old Town? She breathes excitedly.
They're routinely at the top of the league. Gendry, that's amazing!
Yeah. He sounds pleased with himself. It hasn't sunk in yet. I have a week to get back to them, so... Yeah.
I'm so happy for you.
She's grinning like a madwoman, one hand resting in front of her mouth. Thanks. He says quietly, sincerely, and her stomach flutters. Gotta run. Told Jack I'd help him load stuff for the after party.
After party? We haven't won yet.
Yeah, but come on. Regardless, there'll be a party. What do you take us for? Gendry demands.
A bunch of louts, really?
Bye, Arya. See you soon.
Her brain is fully off, a wrung-out sponge by the time she takes the mound. And Gendry's right. It's the perfect state of being. She can't hear the chants from the crowd, can't even hear the thumping of her own heart. Everything is fuzzy and dreamlike. And because it's dreamlike, every hitter is Gendry, only less good because they don't know how to hit against a lefty. And she strikes out hitter after hitter, quickly and easily. She refuses to sit between innings, scared that if she does, she won't be able to get back up. Sirio doesn't even have the heart to tell her not to, and Weasel hands her bottles of water, which she downs as if they are energy drinks. And because her brain is fully off and her body is fully on, she can't even try to control the thoughts of Gendry that sink into her head as she pitches against hitter after hitter. Gendry, grouchy on the train next to her because the lie had gotten more complicated. Her soulmate, and the way he'd kept a baseball bat in his room because of his mother's shitty boyfriends. Gendry at the Wolves game, resolutely wearing his Dragons t-shirt. Her soulmate, changing away from a team he loved because he hated his father so much. Gendry giving her a crooked smile as he teased her while playing catch on the quad. Her soulmate, and the way he shimmied his hips and smelled like pine, like home. Each pitch she throws alternates between the two concepts. Gendry, her friend. Gendry, her soulmate. Both had lied to her, and both loved her. He loves her. She knows he does. He'd all but said it, and probably would have if she hadn't been so upset. She might have been an idiot not noticing that he was her soulmate in the first place, but now, she knows it now. Strike after strike she throws. Three strikes and you're out. How many strikes was the lie? Could it actually be one? One strike because it had all been one lie? Or could it be, as she feared, two? Twice as terrible because he'd done it from two sides. Or was it a strike at all? Was it a ball? She almost freezes when she thinks of it. Because, of course, she's been thinking about it all wrong. She's not the pitcher in this scenario. For once in her life, she's the batter, and Gendry isn't. And if he's the pitcher, then it's not a strike. It's a ball, penalizing the one who throws it, not the batter who misses. She hadn't thrown the pitch. He had, and she'd fucked up. But two balls doesn't walk the runner. You've got two left, not one, not zero. There was so much time left at bat to see who would go. So Gendry had thrown two balls and she groans. Groans because now his cock's on her mind and she is suppressing a grin because of all the baseball sex metaphors that existed, she didn't think she'd ever quite heard that one before. But it's clear now, clearer than it had been before. And so what if he had two balls, ugh, against him? All he had to do was strike her out, or let her get on base. And now, for the more traditional baseball metaphor, Arya realized exactly where a home run would take her. Three innings turn into seven somehow, and when they take her out, everything turns back on, like someone turning up the volume on a stereo. They're up 5-0, and the cheers of, "Spooky, spooky, ow!" fill the stadium. And as she sags against Weasel, she knows she won't have to pay attention, won't have to sit on the edge of her seat to make sure they don't fuck it up. Because they're on fire, truly on fire,
And when Shireen drives in a two-run home run, the stadium seems to explode, and she feels almost bad for Highgarden. Almost. They win 7-0, and the whole school seems to rush to the field, and Aria finds herself hoisted onto shoulders and carried around like some sort of conquering hero as chants of, "Our house! Our house! Our house!" thunder so loudly she thinks the earth might be shaking. When she emerges from the locker room, her voice hoarse from shouting and her hair wet and unbrushed mess, she finds her entire family standing there, grinning, and she stops short. "You're here," she says, stunned, as Dad gives her a huge hug. "Of course we came," says Bran. "Come on, I might be God material, but I'm not omniscient. I need to actually be somewhere to know how to use my powers." John's the next one hugging her, squeezing her so tightly she thinks her ribs are cracking as he lifts her off the ground. "You're a champ." "Literally," Rob says, reaching over and clapping her on the shoulder. "Literally, you're a champion. How does that feel?"
"Remarkably like it did before I was a champion," Arya says dryly.
"Are you going to put her down so the rest of us can have a go?" asks Rickon. "Nope," says John happily.
"Well, you were amazing," Sansa positively squeals. "I didn't have to know a bunch about softball to know you were amazing, and Ned was going to explain everything to me if I needed it."
Dad looks around confused, and then rolls his eyes. "Can we call him Edric? I was here first." Everyone laughs, and Ned shrugs apologetically. "Do you think it's revelatory at all that Sandor looks like Dad and Ned's named, you know?" John hisses in Arya's ear, and she lets out a hoot of mirth. John finally puts her down, grinning broadly.
"What's so funny?" asks Rickon.
"It doesn't bear repeating, I promise." Arya grins. She hugs her mother next.
"Thanks for coming, Mom."
Mom rolls her eyes.
"You know, I do actually like this sport. God knows I've gone to enough games to appreciate it. Of course I would come to see you play."
Her mother kisses her cheek.
"Your father likes to cause trouble."
"I do not," says Dad brightly. "I never cause trouble. I am a paragon of truth and honor. We do not cause trouble, us paragons of truth and honor." Her mother just laughs and kisses Dad's cheek. They make plans for the next day. Brunch at a fancy restaurant in town, then a tour of the castle, since Rickon and John had never seen it. When they part ways, Sansa and Ned walk with her for about 50 feet before Ned asks, "You coming tonight, then?"
"Coming?"
she asks, and it's a testament to how tired she is, or perhaps to her in-game thoughts, that she starts to blush.
"To Jack's and Luke's," Sansa says quickly. "They're hosting the after party."
She doesn't know. She'd like to, that's truth enough. But at the same time, she'd like to see Gendry. She looks around as if half expecting him to be there.
"I'll see. I'm a bit brain dead at the moment, to be honest, and can't really..."
She sees him. He's about 20 feet away, his hands jammed into the pockets of his Harrenhal hoodie, chatting happily with Lyanna and Elia. She hears Ned mutter something to Sansa, who laughs quietly and very pointedly says,
"See you at some point, then."
And the two of them go off together into the night while Arya waits for Gendry.
"Hello?"
she says, and her voice sounds stupidly breathy.
"Good game."
Gendry grins down at her and tentatively extends his arms for a hug. She steps into them gladly.
"I'm so proud of you," he breathes into her hair.
"Thanks," she says, smiling into his chest and letting the scent of pine wash over her. When she pulls away, she notices that Elia and Lyanna have kept on going, and she almost laughs, because it's like everyone's giving them space. Like everyone's saying, "You two go off and do things together. The world will continue without you for a few hours."
"Where are you headed?"
she asks him.
"I don't know," he says, dragging both words out, not breaking eye contact with her. And then, in a complete opposite manner, more staccato, more breathless, he asks, "What about you?" "I was gonna drop my stuff off, but after that, I'm not sure." "Luke and Jack have a party," Gendry suggests, watching her carefully. I wasn't planning on going, unless you wanted. I was thinking something else. Thinking we could talk. Unless..." He bites back a frown. "Unless you want more space." "Yeah, I'd like to. Though..." She feels a slow smile stretch across her face. I think I'm sorted." His face twitches into a smile, and his eyes seem to glow hopefully. "Want me to carry your bag?" "I got it." "I don't mind." He's standing close again. "Your shoulder." "I have two of them," she points out. And he reaches out, and for a moment she thinks he's going to seize the bag, but he doesn't. He cups her chin and bends down, before catching himself and stopping, his eyes darting between hers, silently asking the question. Arya rolls her eyes and raises herself on tiptoes and kisses him, tugging the front of his sweatshirt towards her, and everything stops. There's no gentle breeze, no sound of happy students making their way back to campus around them, not even Arya's heart pounding in her chest. There's just his lips and hers. And it's not a dream. It's not. And she can tell because her dreams seem to pale in comparison to this. The exact curve of his smile against hers, the heat of his breath coming out of his nostrils, the way his fingertips tremble against her skin. When he pulls away, his eyes are serious, and Arya bites her lip. "I really don't want to go to Luke and Jack's party," he says, and she smiles. "I thought we established that's squarely off the agenda for the night." "I was just reiterating," he says. She reaches over and takes his hand, and his palms are calloused from holding bats, the way they are in her dreams. And she weaves her fingers through his, and hand in hand, they walk back towards campus. They don't go to her dorm room, because it doesn't matter if she drops off her bag in the end. They go straight to Gendry's room, a large single she's been in twice, once to nag him to finish his homework so they could play catch, and once when he wanted to pick up a textbook to do some of his biochem homework while watching the Dragons game. She deposits the bag just inside the door, and it hits the floor with a soft thud as Gendry's lips crash against hers again, and she throws her arms around his neck, pulling herself up so that her chest is right against his. His fingers push her baseball cap off and pushes it off her ponytail, which he also undoes before weaving his hands through her still damp from the shower hair. She nips at his lips and he sighs into her mouth, hands coming down to cup her ass as he walks them both back to his bed. He has the bed raised up slightly so that he could fit a chest of drawers underneath it, and he presses her hips against the metal of the bed frame, using it to keep her balanced while his hands dance over her back, her neck, her arms, her chest, and her tongue slips into his mouth. She feels delirious with the heat of him everywhere. She'd never noticed, but her dreams, however hot they were never warm, and she never felt his pulse beneath her fingers as she holds his face and runs her thumbs along the stubble of his cheeks. She's never felt the stubble either. He's always perfectly clean-shaven in her dreams. But there's a roughness to his face, and when one of their heads turns or twists to find a new angle, he scrapes her skin slightly, and she loves every second of it. Every reminder that they're here, that they're together, that this is them. This right here is how they were always supposed to be, from the day they were born until the day they die. She feels his erection pressing into her, just along the crevice between her stomach and her leg, and she bucks her hips slightly into it, and he groans into her again. She grins and does it again. "That is going to get you in trouble," he says through kisses, and she smiles into his lips and drops her hands from his face to rest on his chest between them.
I like trouble, she breathes, and tweaks his nipples. He yelps and pulls away, his eyes wide and dark, his lips and cheeks red, and she leans forward and kisses the underside of his jaw, scraping her nose and lips against the stubble under his chin, her fingers still pinching at his chest. He tilts his head back and lets her, his hands coming to her sides, and for the first time, they seem to be there more to steady himself and less to steady her. Arya kisses her way down his neck, to the dip between his collarbones, letting the dark hair on his chest that's poking through the neck of his t-shirt brush against her lips, before she kisses her way to the side of his neck and sucks. Her hands drop to his ass, and she remembers before she knew who he was, when she'd watched him running in her dreams and noticed how muscular his ass was. And she laughs to herself because, gods, she wants to see him naked. See the way his skin is smooth and dimples over muscles that hours and hours of baseball, of hitting and running, have given him. Gendry's hands leave her sides and come up between them, nudging them apart as he cups her breasts, finding her stiffening nipples through her t-shirt and sports bra, and circling around them, rubbing his thumbs across them in a way that makes her smile into his neck.
"Does that feel good?"
he asks her.
"Mm-hmm. Good.
You know what would feel better?" she asks, and she kisses her way to the other side of his neck, still smiling.
"What?"
She pulls away and tugs her t-shirt over her head, then reaches down and pulls off the sports bra. It almost gets stuck around her head, and as she fiddles with it, she feels something warm and wet on her nipples, and it goes straight to her groin because she knows he's kissing her. She can tell because there's his stubble again, scratching at her breasts this time. When she throws her bra to the ground, she weaves her fingers through his hair, gasping slightly as he rubs his teeth over the stiffened flesh, because the smoothness of them, the sturdiness of them, gods, that feels amazing. Her voice is trembling, air going shallow into her lungs.
"Looks like you were right then,"
he murmurs, and he kisses his way to her other breast, and she groans as he takes the other nipple into his mouth and sucks. She lets her hands fall from his head, sends her left down between them to try and reach for his cock, but he's squatted down slightly, the way he would if he were guarding base, and so she can't quite reach it, and has to content herself with gripping the mattress behind her, her head rolling back as she focuses on breathing, focuses on him. Soon enough, his lips are back on hers, and she's shoving his t-shirt up and breaks the kiss only long enough to pull it off him and throw it to the ground with her own t-shirt and her bra. That's when Gendry picks her up and places her on the bed, clambering up after her, and they lie down together on their sides, since the mattress is too small for both of them.
"That bed in the dream the other night was handy,"
Gendry grins. "Yeah, I always thought these were big beds, but then you came along," she sighs. He chuckles, and she runs her hand along his chest, tracing patterns through his hair as she moves them down. She feels his stomach tighten under her touch, and she breaks away from him just to see, and fucking hell, he's got like an 8-pack or something. She lays her palms flat along them, and she hears him laugh again.
"Never noticed before,"
he teases. "I did, but it's different when it's not a dream," she replies. His smile fades slightly, and he reaches over and cups her cheek. Then his hand drifts down to cup her breast.
"I know,"
he breathes, suddenly serious.
"It's better."
"Way better," she agrees, and she finds his cock and rubs it through his jeans. His head falls forward and his eyes flutter closed, and his hips rock into her hands. She fiddles with his belt buckle for a moment, then unzips his jeans and reaches down, and her dreams were never this warm. Never. When she'd taken his cock in her hand before, it had felt soft, but never warm, never solid, never sturdy the way it does now. And Gendry's groan is louder than it ever was when she had done something like this while they slept. She draws him out of his boxers and jeans and stares at him, at it,
seeing milky moisture at the tip. She pumps once, twice, three times, then releases it. She tugs at his jeans and underwear, dragging them down his legs while he toes off his shoes, and they fall onto the floor. She sits there, looking down at him, lying on his bed, his eyes hooded, his lips swollen, his cock hard and long and resting against his stomach. "You're incredible," she breathes as she stares at him, and she sees color rising on his cheeks. He sits up and kisses her hard, nipping at her lips, his tongue in her mouth, his hands on her hair, cupping her breasts, finding the button of her jeans and loosening it. She parts her legs a little, and he slides his hand into her pants, and she gasps as his fingers find her clit, because holy fuck, she wasn't expecting her stomach to drop that way when his fingers found her cunt. The muscles of her legs tremble, and she clings to his neck as he rubs light circles into her, while her heart hammers in her throat and her breath comes shorter and shorter, and she feels like the blood in her neck, her hands, her lips is on fire. She widens her legs even more, and she feels him push his hand deeper into her pants, but it's not enough, and she pulls away from him, and together they tug her pants down. They laugh when they get caught at her ankles, just over her sneakers, and she twists around on the bed so that she can unlace one shoe and then the other. Gendry pulls them loose and then removes her pants and underpants, and she scoots back and sits there with her legs wide, waiting for him to kiss her again and reach down to rub her cunt, hot and open and wanting his touch. He does kiss her, but not where she expects him to. His lips are on the inside of her thigh, his chin rubbing her skin raw as he kisses his way up and up, and her eyes roll into the back of her head and she gasps out his name because fuck, his tongue has never felt this good. Not once. She feels him smile into her and she says his name again and he looks up at her and his eyes are so blue and it's just like that dream, but so unlike it. Because even if the movements are familiar, the patterns he's tracing on her clit with his tongue, nothing's the same, and yet everything's the same, but everything's different. She closes her eyes and arches her back, and her fingers find her nipples and pinch at them while she gasps and rocks her hips into his face and does her best to widen her legs even further. Because the wider her legs are, the further out her clit sticks, and the further out her clit sticks, the more likely it is that she'll... Her body convulses, as if every piece of her decided to erupt at the same time. And oh gods, this is better than a dream. Better than her own fingers, because she's warm and he's warm, and her cunt clenches and unclenches in waves of pleasure that rise through her stomach and down her legs and all the way to her lips and scalp. She feels him nudge at her clit gently as he pulls away and watches, and somehow him watching her fall apart on his bed makes everything that much more intense, because it's really him. It's really them. It's everything she could ever have wanted. She's still breathing hard when he slides up the bed next to her. "How are you doing there?" he asks with a grin. And if she weren't suddenly so exhausted, she'd elbow him or think of some sarcastic reply. But she can't right now. She can't because everything's still in her head and her body is suddenly unable to move anymore. She wonders, thinking back on her day, that she'd been able to move at all before. So she tilts her head and finds his lips, and he's a little more salty, a little more bitter, and she likes it because she knows he likes it because that taste is her. "Arya?" he asks, and she hears concern there and nervousness. "Are you?" "I'm fine," she says, but her voice sounds almost drunk. "I'm just basking. Do you have a condom?" she asks him, because she knows it's on his mind and has a feeling he won't know how to ask her, not if he thinks she's too tired. "Yeah, hang on." He sits up and reaches over to his bedside table. "Prepared, aren't you?" she teases. He blushes. "I'm not complaining. I just figured better safe than..." "Sorry." She kisses the side of his stomach,
because it's nearest. She stays there, watching as he rips the foil and rolls the condom down his shaft. Then he turns and bends down to kiss the top of her head. "You sure?" he asks. "Yes," she says, rolling her eyes. He slides his hips down the bed and connects his lips to hers as he settles himself over her, and she feels the crown of his cock just at her entrance. He pushes into her slowly with a hiss, and he closes his eyes, his nostrils flaring. She lifts her head and kisses his neck, bringing her feet up to wrap around his waist, and he pulls out and pushes back into her. He's almost painfully slow as she kisses the veins of his throat. And if she hadn't just come harder than she ever had in her life, she would have probably tried to get him to pick up speed. But instead, she holds on to him, tracing circles into his back and clenching her cunt around him whenever he's sheathed inside her. He opens his eyes and looks down at her, then bends his head and kisses her hard, his hips quickening and his breath coming faster in and out of his body. Aria runs her hands up his back to his hair and clutches at his scalp, holding him faster to her, kissing along the rough edge of his jaw, along his sweaty brow, down his nose as he thrusts faster and faster, his cock sliding in and out of her, warm and thick and right as his groans turn into whimpers, turn into gasps, turn into a strangled cry as he stills completely, his face contorted in an expression that's both completely new and completely familiar. He collapses onto her a moment later, breathing hard, his heart pounding against his ribs, and all the air rushes out of her body, pushed out by him, and she laughs gently, running her fingers through his hair again. Because in their dreams, when he collapses onto her, she never felt as though he truly did, because she never felt his weight. "You okay there?" she asks him. "Mm-hmm," he replies. And she grins and feels him grin into her neck, and she wraps her arms around him and squeezes him as tightly as she can. "Good." She doesn't know how long they lie there like that. She doesn't know when he pulls out of her and disposes of his condom, and then comes to curl around her. She just knows that when she wakes up the next morning, it doesn't matter that she'd been too tired to dream, because she was with him all the same. Aria spends most of the next day feeling very sore, wincing at what feels like the slightest motion. Her shoulder is killing her, and her mother suggests, not for the first time, that maybe she should take some time away from softball before she does herself a serious injury. She shrugs it off, which only causes her to wince again, but she'd rather be wincing over her shoulder than the wincing that makes her blush scarlet every time she crosses and uncrosses her legs. Because to everyone but her mother, probably, it's fairly obvious what might make her wince from that. It certainly hadn't seemed like Gendry would stretch her out quite that way last night, but she'd been delirious, apparently, and every step she climbs while walking with John through the old castle, or every time she sits on a bench, comes the sudden, jarring reminder that last night she and Gendry had sex, and that it had been amazing. And that when they'd kissed goodbye that morning, they'd been grinning like idiots, and she knew now that she had no finals left, she'd have nothing but time to spend with him, playing catch or walking around or in bed, whatever they wanted. That thought makes her blush quite as much as the singing between her legs. "See you soon," Dad says as she hugs him goodbye at the train. "Yep, just a week or so," she says. "You should bring a friend up," Mom says. "I never really did meet Gendry." "You will," John mutters, and Sansa elbows him as Arya says loudly, "I'll see if he's free. He's getting recruited, so I don't think he knows what his schedule's like at the moment." "Any good teams?" Dad asks. "Old Town and River Run." "Old Town," Dad says, sounding pleased, at the same time that Mom says, "River Run!" excitedly. They look at each other and smile. As she and Sansa leave the train station together, her phone buzzes.
Gendry Waters.
Catch?
Arya Stark.
You bet.
The end.
Say you remember me, standing in a nice dress, staring at the sunset, babe. Red lips and rosy cheeks. Say you'll see me again, even if it's just pretend. Say you remember me.
If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening! Author's notes. The softball team is Aria, pitcher, Myrcella, catcher, Shireen, third base, Liana Mormont, shortstop, Joy Hill, left field, Elia Sand, center field, Obella Sand, first base, Alisane Bulwer, second base, Cynthia Frey, right field, Weasel, pitcher, Elena Westerling, pitcher, Rosamund Lannister, pitcher. The baseball team is Gendry, second base, Angie, center field, Lem, left field, Tom, right field, Ned Dane, first base, Merritt O'Moontown, pitcher, John O'Nutton, pitcher, Puddingfoot, Kyle, pitcher, Harwin, pitcher, Jack B. Lucky, third base, Likely Luke, shortstop, Dennett, Nudge, Notch, Beardless Dick, catcher. Reader's notes.
Yay, this fic. Oh, okay. So this is not the kind of thing that I ever would have picked to read on my own. While I like a good college AU, Arya Gendry wasn't really something I was focusing on in Game of Thrones fandom. I was mostly really focused on Sansa stuff. And the Sansa pairings in this are not my preferred Sansa pairings. And so I probably would never have clicked on this on my own, but I was matched with Annalise O10 for ITBE 2019. And one of the things that we matched on was Game of Thrones, Arya and Gendry. And so I went to go look for a whole bunch of Arya and Gendry fic for this. And I wanted a nice, substantial one as one of them, and I clicked on this one, and it, to be brutally honest, it made the cut of stuff that I was going to read first to see whether it was even, you know, like whether I enjoyed it at all, because the author was pro podfic, had a pro podfic statement, in their profile. So I was like, okay, well, I can probably get permission for this. So at least, you know, if I read it and like it, it's probably a go. So I read it and just, so things Annalise has in their letter are like pining and stuff like that. And I don't do pining. Like, pining is not a thing that I ever look for in fic. And honestly, it isn't a thing that I super enjoy. And only after I read this, or as I was reading this fic, I was like, this is perfect because it's got enough of stuff that I like in it that I'm really intrigued and that sort of stuff and really want to play around with this. But also, all it is pining. It's just like endless pining and relationship shenanigans, which normally isn't my bag of tea, but, like, it seemed right up Annalise's alley. And also, Arya does math stuff, and I know Annalise does, like, math stuff, I think. So, like, yeah, basically just everything seemed perfect. And then I went back and read Annalise's letter again and found out that high school and college AUs are not something that they want. And yeah, so I am hoping, Annalise, that you listened to this and actually enjoyed it, because I did ask you, yay, ultra sneak, about this, and it wasn't like a hard no. So I'm hoping you took the chance on this, because it really seemed like absolutely everything about this, aside from the college setting, was like made for you. So yeah. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope anybody else who listened to it enjoyed it. Yeah, thanks for listening. Flying too close to the sun. Recorded one giant chapter today. Go for a second tiny one, and of course they start snowblowing.